Welcome to Honey from the Rock, a podcast devoted to Bible exposition. My father, Jack Christensen, preached expositionally for over 50 years, first as a missionary to Pakistan and later as a pastor in New England. His legacy lives on in me. He often began his sermons with a little expression, and now a little honey from the rock, taken from Psalm 81, verse 16. The psalmist wrote, "I would feed you with the finest of the wheat, and with honey from the rock I would satisfy you." Today, more than ever, we need to feed our souls on the words of God in the Bible. The crying need of the church is for God-centered, word-explaining messages. So now, my friends, a little honey from the rock. This universe seems purposeless to those who do not know God. John Herman Randall wrote, "So far as the eye of science can see, man is alone, absolutely alone, in a universe in which his very appearance is a kind of cosmic accident. Life races on, a kaleidoscope of people, places, and events rushing towards an unknown end. Yet unseen, in the minute details, the hand of God shapes our lives and orchestrates the flow of human history. My friends, I am here to tell you that we are no cosmic accident. God knows exactly what he is doing, and we can trust him to achieve his purpose in this universe. As Daniel nears the end of his life, he can look back and see God's hand, and he can look ahead and see God's plan. Knowing God's hand in the past and God's plan for the future allows him to live purposefully in his time. Today, we come to the end of our study of Daniel. Daniel 12, verses 5 through 13, teaches us an important lesson about living now in the light of God's plan for the future. And the lesson is this: serve God now as you seek God's purpose for the future. I see four principles about God's purpose for the future that help us live in the present. Principle number one is, persecution lasts only as long as it takes to accomplish God's purpose, verses 5 through 7 of Daniel 12. Listen to his words. "Then I, Daniel, looked, and behold, two others were standing, one on this bank of the river, and the other on that bank of the river. And one said to the man dressed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, 'How long will it be until the end of these wonders?' I heard the man dressed in linen, who was above the waters of the river, as he raised his right hand and his left toward heaven, and swore by him who lives forever that it would be for a time, times, and half a time. And as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people, all these events will be completed." The final vision given to Daniel began in chapter 10, with Daniel standing on the banks of the Tigris River. God sent an angel to reveal to Daniel this great prophecy that we've been studying in chapters 11 and 12. And now we come to the end of this prophecy, and Daniel sees two more angels standing on opposite banks of the river. One of the angels speaks to the man dressed in linen who was above the waters of the river. This person would be the angel who has been speaking to Daniel since chapter 10, verse 10, when the story began. Daniel had fallen with his face to the ground, and we read, "Then, behold, a hand touched me and set me trembling on my hands and knees. He said to me, O Daniel, man of high esteem, understand the words that I am about to tell you, and stand upright, for I have now been sent to you. And when he had spoken this word to me, I stood up, trembling. Then he said to me, Do not be afraid, Daniel, for from the first day that you set your heart on understanding this and on humbling yourself before your God, your words were heard, and I have come in response to your words. You see, God heard Daniel's prayer and sent this angel to answer those prayers with his revelation of God's plans. Now, apparently, this angel is hovering over the middle of the river when another angel addresses him. And the question that the angel asks is, How long? How long will it be until the end of these wonders? In other words, the angel wanted to know how long the Antichrist would have to persecute the nation of Israel. You see, the angels are curious too. They have apparently been listening to the revelation given to Daniel and now break in with their own questions. But their questions are our questions too. The angel in the middle of the river then responds with an oath. He raises not just one hand, as would be customary when taking an oath before God, but he raises both hands as if to add a measure of solemnity to his words. Then he tells them that the Antichrist will have a time, times, and half a time to persecute Israel. It means 1 year, 2 more years, and a half a year, and refers to the final 3.5 years of the 70th week of Daniel, according to our guiding prophecy in Daniel 9:24-27. We can go back farther in Daniel. Back in Daniel 7:25, we're told that the people of Israel will be given into the hand of Antichrist for a time, times, and half a time. Revelation 11, verse 2, tells us that this persecution of Israel by the Antichrist will last for 42 months. Revelation 12:6 tells us that it will last for 1,260 days. All of these prophecies cover the same basic time period. This 3.5 year period will be a time of horrible persecution for the nation of Israel, worse than any time in the nation's history, according to Daniel 12, verse 1. Yet God will preserve a remnant of Israel alive in the wilderness for a time, times, and half a time, according to Revelation 12:14. All of this persecution serves God's purpose. The angel adds a significant statement regarding the end point for Israel's persecution. All of these things will be completed as soon as they finish shattering the power of the holy people, according to verse 7 of our text. The world will know that the persecution is completed when God's purpose is finished for the nation of Israel. The end game is the shattering of the power, literally the hand, of the holy people. They will not be a proud nation anymore. The Gentile powers will shatter the nation of Israel as she has never been shattered before, and only when Israel reaches the lowest of the low points in her long history will she be ready to surrender to Messiah. When that point comes, then Messiah will return and rescue his people, according to Daniel 12:1. The angel Michael told Daniel in Daniel 12:1, there will be a time of distress such as never occurred since there was a nation until that time. And at that time, your people, everyone who is found written in the book, will be rescued. Many of those who sleep in the dust of the ground will awake, these to everlasting life, but the others to disgrace and everlasting contempt. The classic passage that explains this in more detail is Zechariah 14, where we read, "Behold, a day is coming for the Lord when the spoil taken from you will be divided among you. For I will gather all the nations against Jerusalem to battle, and the city will be captured, the houses plundered, the women ravished, and half of the city exiled, but the rest of the people will not be cut off from the city. Then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as when he fights on a day of battle. And in that day, his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which is in front of Jerusalem on the east, and the Mount of Olives will be split in its middle from east to west by a very large valley, so that half of the mountain will move toward the north and the other half toward the south. You will flee by the valley of my mountains, for the valley of the mountains will reach to Azel. Yes, you will flee just as you fled before the earthquake in the days of Uzziah, king of Judah. Then the Lord, my God, will come, and all the holy ones with him, and the Lord will be king over all the earth. In that day, the Lord will be the only one, and his name the only one." Jesus Christ, God's Messiah, is coming back. He will stand on the Mount of Olives one day. He will stand where he last stood on earth. He ascended from the Mount of Olives in Acts 1, and he will return to the Mount of Olives when he comes back. My friends, the first principle about God's purpose is that persecution lasts only as long as it takes to accomplish God's purpose. God rescues his people after he has humbled his people, and they are ready to turn to the Messiah, Jesus Christ, by faith. Now, the second principle tells us that prophecy is given not to satisfy our curiosity, but to explain God's purpose, verses 8 through 10. "As for me, I heard, but could not understand. So I said, 'My Lord, what will be the outcome of these events?' And he said, 'Go your way, Daniel, for these words are concealed and sealed up until the end time. Many will be purged, purified, and refined, but the wicked will act wickedly, and none of the wicked will understand. But those who have insight will understand.'" Now, Daniel is confused. This is a different question than the angel answered in verse 7. Daniel does not ask how long will the persecution last, but what will become the outcome or the end result of all that takes place during that final horrible period of time. Would the nation of Israel survive? How will God rescue his people from the grasp of Satan? The angel does not answer Daniel's question, just as God often does not answer our questions about the future today. You see, prophecy is not given to satisfy our curiosity, but to explain God's purpose. We are given information about the future on a need-to-know basis, and this is all Daniel needs to know. So be very careful about getting so caught up in prophecy that you spend your days delving into predictions that God has not meant for us to know. God tells Daniel that these words are concealed and sealed up until the end times in verse 9. Now, as I pointed out back in chapter 12, verse 4, these words refer to the process of protecting an original ancient document. Ancient documents were written in duplicate. The signers of the contract sealed both, but one was concealed or closed up, is the term, in a protected place, while the copy was open to examination. So God is telling Daniel that God protects the prophecy until the end time when it will be fulfilled. We can study the prophecy, but we will not know the answers to all our questions until the time comes for God to explain that prophecy more fully. God tells us four truths to guide us as we await the time when God will bring all things to an end. First, God is in the business of purifying souls. Second, evil people will continue to perform evil deeds. Third, sinful people do not understand God's will. And fourth, God's people will understand God's purpose. Sin is real. Evil abounds in this world. Does that not describe our world today? Our society does not like to acknowledge that evil is real. People today deny the existence of evil. It offends them to think that man is basically sinful, not good, and that evil men do evil things. We like to think that evil happens because the person had, well, he had a rough life. If we just learn to understand each other, then everyone will get along in this world. If we eradicate poverty in Gaza, then Hamas will be satisfied. They will not. They do not want money. They have plenty of money. If we bring peace to Jerusalem, then Hezbollah will be happy. Not so. They do not want peace in Jerusalem. Hezbollah wants all Jews eliminated from the face of the earth, and they want America and all we stand for destroyed. You do not negotiate with men like that. Humans are sinful. Now, all humans are born sinful. Evil may lie dormant in some or be controlled in others, but evil is inherent in every human heart. How do we understand the world in which we live if we refuse to acknowledge the reality of evil? The philosopher Blaise Pascal said it well. Certainly nothing offends us more rudely than this doctrine of original sin. And yet without this mystery, the most incomprehensible of all, we are incomprehensible to ourselves. We cannot understand ourselves until we start with the doctrine of original sin. Humans are sinful, and from that starting point alone, we can begin to understand humanity. Every man, woman, and child born on this earth is inherently sinful. Our circumstances may exacerbate our sinfulness. They may contribute to evil deeds, but we are all sinners. This is the starting point for understanding God's purpose in this world. Man is sinful. God is perfect. God is therefore in the business of perfecting humanity. God purges, purifies, and refines the souls of men. God's purpose is not to give us wealth so that we can live in luxury. God's purpose is not even to satisfy our every desire. God's purpose is to purge us from sin. God's purpose is to make us holy, not happy. Like purifying gold, God must burn out the sin that controls our lives. And this is God's purpose, to create a new humanity, pure and holy, who will populate a new earth dedicated to the glory of God. God sent his only Son to die on the cross to pay the price for our sin, so that all who trust in his death can be cleansed, can be purified. He brings events into our lives to purify us so that we will learn to hate sin and devote ourselves to God's holiness. He is making us into the image of his Son so that we will learn to live as Christ lived. And only then will we be truly happy. God tells us in verse 10 that all those who have insight will understand. When we look around at this world, we see the suffering and the evil. We can understand what is happening only by looking behind the scenes to see the hand of God limiting and controlling the forces of evil in this world. One day, this entire world will be purified when evil has finally run its course. In 1937, Walt Disney released its first full-length animated movie, Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. Disney artists drew over 1 million pictures, each of which flashed on the screen for 1/24th of a second. When we watch a movie at regular speed, we have no idea of what is actually happening to make those actions on the screen. Our lives, our world, are like an animated movie. God pays attention to the details, the individual pictures. As our lives run at regular speed, we do not see the hand of God guiding the events, so we must trust that God's sovereign power paints every frame that moves our lives. That leads us to the third principle. The third purpose principle is this: perseverance of the saints brings blessing when God accomplishes his purpose, verses 11 and 12. From the time that the regular sacrifice is abolished and the abomination of desolation is set up, there will be 1,290 days. How blessed is he who keeps waiting and attains to the 1,335 days. Two numbers. What do they mean? The starting point for both numbers is the same. The days are counted from the time when the regular sacrifices are stopped in the temple at Jerusalem and the abomination of desolation is set up in that temple. These two events will occur simultaneously halfway through Daniel's 70th week, according to Daniel 9:27. The clock starts ticking on that day. The final 3.5 years would be 1,260 days, according to Revelation 11:2 and 12:6. This means that both time frames used in this verse extend beyond the end of the tribulation period. 30 days after the end of the tribulation, we reach the end of 1,290 days. 75 days after the end of the tribulation period is the end of the second period running concurrently with the first. So what do these periods of time mean? What happens at the end of each one? Well, we don't really know, and we aren't told. We can speculate. And I emphasize that our best guesses are speculation, for God did not actually tell us what will happen. We do know that a number of activities must take place after Christ returns and before the millennial kingdom is fully enjoyed. We are told in Ezekiel 39:12 that it will take 7 months to clean up the dead bodies from Armageddon. The people of Israel living around the world must be regathered into the land, and God will remove the rebels living in the land as he sets up his millennial kingdom, according to Ezekiel 20, verses 33 to 38. There must be two judgments to determine who will enter the millennial kingdom. The judgment of the nations will take place after Christ's return, according to Matthew 25, 31 to 46. The judgment of Israel will take place as well, according to Ezekiel 20, 33 to 38. So, I think the best guess is to see the first date as the date when the gathering of Israelites from around the world back to Jerusalem, back to Israel, is complete. The second date is the inauguration of the millennial kingdom after the completion of the judgments to determine who will populate that kingdom. So 75 days after the return of Christ, the millennial kingdom officially begins. four things strike me about this prophecy. One, God is working on a timetable. Two, God tells us that timetable in advance. Three, God controls man's plans down to the very day. And four, perseverance through tough times brings the blessings of God in the end. We may not know the precise results of these dates. What we do know is that the second date is filled with a promise. God promises to bless anyone who perseveres until the second date. The actual blessing may not be defined, but we know that perseverance brings God's blessing. So stick with it. Persevere. One of my favorite little poems teaches perseverance. Two frogs fell into a deep cream bowl. One was an optimistic soul, but the other took the gloomy view. "We shall drown," he said without more ado. So with a last despairing cry, he flung out his legs and he said goodbye. Quoth the other with a merry grin, "I can't get out, but I won't give in. I will just swim around till my strength is spent, and then I will die the more content." Bravely he swam till it would seem his struggles began to churn the cream. On top of the butter he gladly stopped, and out of the bowl he gaily hopped. What is the moral? It is easily found. If you can't hop out, keep swimming around. Now let's look at the fourth purpose principle in Daniel 12. Personal faithfulness receives her reward according to God's sovereign purpose, verse 13. We will receive our reward in the end. So be faithful. Daniel writes, "But as for you," the angel says to him, "But as for you, go your way to the end. Then you will enter into rest and rise again for your allotted portion at the end of the age." Your allotted portion at the end of the age. You will rise again to enjoy that. God tells Daniel what he tells all of us. Stay the course. Go on about the work I have called you to do. We are to serve God now as we wait on God for the future. God promises Daniel that he will enter into rest and rise for his allotted portion at the end of the age. So work now, then rest and rise again for your reward, my friends. This is the pattern of those who follow God. The Hebrew word for rest means to be in a state of restoring energy, to be in this state until an expected event. The word was used for resting in the grave. The word translated to rise is the same word used back in Daniel 12:1 and translated stand and rise. Here it literally means to stand up in contrast to the resting position of a dead body. So, this verse is speaking of physical, bodily resurrection. Daniel's body would remain in the grave until the end of this age, when his body would be raised from the dead, and he would stand before God with his soul and body united again. From the day when Daniel died physically until the end of this age, he lives with God, but in a bodiless state. On that day, his body will rise again, and he will receive his allotted portion. This Hebrew word is a word used for land portions. It was a territory given to a person as his inheritance, his allotment. So Daniel will be given his allotted reward on the day when he is resurrected. I believe that day for an Old Testament saint like Daniel is at the return of Jesus Christ. The Christian life, then, is largely a decision to live for eternity and not for this age. to live forever and not for now. We Christians make a conscious choice to invest our lives in God's kingdom rather than our careers. We choose future rewards over present payback. In 1946, Akio Morita and another man started a new company called Tokyo Telecommunications Engineering in a bombed-out department store. 11 years later, in 1955, Morita's company made the first portable transistor radio. Bulova, an American corporation, offered to buy the radios at a great profit if Mr. Morita would agree to allow them to be manufactured under the Bulova name. Morita decided against the deal. He told company executives, "I am now taking the first step for the next 50 years of my company." Morita's company, of course, went on to become one of the great success stories of the 20th century. He changed the name, however, to Sony. Christians make the same kind of choice. We live with a long view of life. We take the first step in our lives for Christ when we decide to invest in God's future instead of our present. We live for Christ's eternal kingdom rather than this world's temporal kingdom. The heavenly kingdom is more valuable to us than any earthly kingdom. We bank on God's rewards at the end of this age instead of human rewards this year. Personal faith receives her reward when and where God wants to give it. So, my friends, serve God now as you seek God's purpose for the future. God is already at work all around us. He is directing the events and the people, the circumstances and the situations. And when we join God in His work, we enjoy His reward in the end. In 1945, Cliff and Billy had scraped together enough money for a simple wedding and 2 train tickets to a city with a resort hotel. However, when they arrived, they found the hotel had closed down. The honeymoon was rapidly unraveling. With almost no money, in an unfamiliar city, they thumbed a ride. The driver was sympathetic to their plight and took them to a grocery store owned by a woman he knew. The newlyweds spent their first night in a room over the store. The next day, Cliff was playing Christian songs on his trombone when the woman heard him and arranged to have them spend the rest of their honeymoon at the house of a Christian friend of hers. Several days later, their host invited them to attend a youth rally where a young evangelist was speaking. The song leader was sick that night, and so Cliff was asked to lead the music at the service. That young evangelist was Billy Graham. Cliff Barrows and Billy Graham served God together all over the globe for over half a century. There are no coincidences with God. As Albert Einstein once said, coincidence is God's way of remaining anonymous. My friends, when life doesn't work out the way you planned, remember this: God has His own plans for you, and you can trust His plans for your future. Serve God now as you seek God's purpose for the future.